for this evening, and it's Terry F. from La Costa.
It's a big group. I'm Terry, alcoholic.
Terry.
I love this meeting. You have a great group here. I've never been, but I've been to a lot of AA meetings, and if you're new, you're not going to do better than this. I mean, you have hot coffee coming in, a sequestered little smoking area, vaping is allowed to, and they record. You have books and other books over there in the literature section, which is good. I like those other books. You guys are of service. You're kind, enthusiastic. That's what I see here. So I feel safe and welcome. And kind of like what Lizzie said, I'd never felt safe or welcome. I felt like either I needed to be the top of the heap or I was the lowest of the low. You know, there was no just being a normal guy. And I also want to say hi to... Hi. I remember that much. And I agree, that's really important. You know, I don't know what I'm going to say, which is good for me. Because I used to do these epic, like, pitches in the shower. And then I'd get here, it would all go to shit quick, you know. And I'd be like, the bullshit meter would go, wah, 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 you know. It was like, everybody was, uh-huh, you know. But now it's like, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know why I'm here, you know. And I needed a meeting coming down here. I just happened to be speaking at it. So I'm bored with the speaker already. So, but my guys came down. There's a lot of my guys from my home group. And if this is your home group, well done. I mean, you should love your home group and attend it. I never miss Tuesday nights where I am. I'm involved. I have had a commitment the whole time there. Much to Larry's chagrin. Thank you, Larry. I'm going to have Larry speak at mine. Where's Larry? Or Giselle. Where's Giselle? All right, he left. She left. But that's what we do. We help each other out, and we support each other's groups. So I'm happy to be here. There was so much going on before I got up here. I was hoping that you guys were just going to pray out, and it was like, one more thing. Okay. We want to thank the chairs. It's new carpet. So, what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. Well, I'm going to just kind of throw that on its head a little bit. What it's like now is, I'll just start with this. So last night, I had a good friend of mine was playing at the Belly Up. I went down to see his set, had a great time, got in the car, was driving down the Coast Highway, windows down, music blaring, and, you know, I see this, like, Parks and Recreation. I thought it was a cop, so I slowed down. And then I'm like, it's just Parks and Rec. They can't do anything. So he pulled me over and gave me a ticket. I was like, I wanted to say, I didn't even know you guys could do this, but I didn't think that was the right thing to do. So Parks and Rec can give you a ticket. And, you know, that's not very glamorous, you know, coming from the hood and, you know, like rough times and now... Now I'm getting taken to task by Parks and Rec. Yeah. So, but, you know, that's me. I'm still arrogant. I still don't think I have to wait in that line. I still think that the rules don't apply to me. I still think that I can just cheat a little bit. But, you know, the nicest thing was when he was writing me up, I was like, I turned into like a schoolboy. I was like, of course I have my insurance. And yes, want some warrants? I said, no warrants. None. Go figure. Has been years. And he wrote me up, and so that was it. So I'm not completely cured of my rebellion and my, I don't know, just that part of me that always just wants to push and push back. And I don't know that that'll ever go away. But Manny said it, but I did surrender. I surrendered to the fact that I suffer from alcoholism. And I did that about 25 years ago. And I questioned that stupid stuff there too. I did. And, you know, and now it's, I love it. I love the steps. I love the principles that are attached to the steps. But I was 23 when I came in, and that's kind of where I'll start. I mean, I won't go too much of the drunkalogue, but I qualify. And I grew up in Los Angeles, and I didn't have alcoholic parents. I had really young, explosive, dismissive parents. That's how it felt. They had lives to lead, and kids were getting in the way. And so I was, my first, like, alcohol was fantasy. I just remember I disappeared into fantasy. And that's where I was happiest. Kind of like where the wild things are. I would just kind of disappear. I would create grand lands that I was, you know, the master of. And I wasn't abused. I'm really tight with both of them now. They haven't been together for years, but they just didn't want to be parents. And I think they thought, oh yeah, you know, you have 2.2 kids, and isn't he cute and everything? But there was no explaining. There was no engaging. I didn't feel part of. So I just kind of disappeared. And I remember my first drink, which was I lived in Topanga Canyon, which is kind of in the LA area. They had an equestrian riding stables. And in the back of this was a pink adobe shack where the hired hands lived. Mariachi music played really loud. They had breakfast on the hibachi. I mean, it was three meals. There was like 300 people living in a 4x4 room. It was, and I wanted them to adopt me. I really wanted, because they always laughed and they were always drinking. And I was back there one time and they gave me a Coors can, a Coors, you know, beer. And I must have been 9 or 10. And I remember, because it was so old school, that I took the little ring and I put it on my, you know, when they popped up, all the young people are going, and I put it on, and I think I wore that ring for like a month. And I drank that beer, and they counted, uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco. You never forget your first. And I remember, like, it was just like, boom, home. There was something about it. And I love alcohol. I've loved it since that moment. I did drugs, too, but alcohol for me owns the house. Drugs just were the transient roommates that came by for a while, you know. Like, alcohol's king. Alcohol just sorted everything out. And I wasn't afraid of my house from that time. And I don't think I had alcohol again for a number of years, but it planted a seed. Like, this is magic elixir. This is strong medicine. There's something in that stuff that's really going to make you feel okay. And I think I got started again probably in my teens. And I was fortunate. I really had a great experience. You know, alcohol gave me a long tether. It didn't start, I've heard it said, you know, it was fun with problems and then just problems. For me, the problems didn't come for a long time. Although I will say I'm not from San Diego, but my first arrest was here in 1982. That's right, yeah. At Jack Murphy Stadium, The Who and The Clash. And I was fighting in the parking lot. Never even made it into the show. So, San Diego! So, and the reason I was so drunk is because we went to Tijuana, which you could just step over and then come back. I drank like 90 shots of tequila or some obscene thing and spent a night in the drunk tank. And then didn't have another arrest for many, many years. So, you know, L.A. for me was this good time because I worked in the industry that I wanted. I knew I wanted to work in the music industry, and I got a job in the mailroom at United Artists Records, and I kept that for a while, and that went from there to a job for Chapel Music Publishing, and I loved that job too. And I was around music all day. I do remember, though, before I went to Chapel, I had this little stint at Innerworld Music, and I loved this company. It was a great company. And there was a guy named Cy Mayell, and Cy was the bean counter upstairs, didn't talk to anybody. And it was a big company. And he always kind of had one eye shut because he always had a cigarette in his mouth. And he was, you know, and everybody would kind of get scared. And so, you know, Cy said to me, you know, I want to see you in my office, Terry. And I was all of 17, 18 years old. And I went up there and he goes, Terry, you're fired. And I was like, my God, why? I mean, I love the company and everything. He goes, Terry, I'm looking at this chart. You've missed 18 Mondays, you know. Do you know we're open on Monday, Terry? You know. And, you know, and the reason was Sunday was a big drinking night, you know. Mondays were not easy because Sunday was a big night. Because, you know, the bridge and tunnel crowd was gone and nobody really came out on Sundays except for the cool people, right? And so that was like one of the first, you know, consequences. And it was hard to lose that job, and it was hard to say, okay. But I didn't put it together. And Lizzie said this too. She said, you have to have two things. I think this is what I heard, is you have to know that you're alcoholic and know there's a solution. Because you may see the solution in here, but if you don't think you're alcoholic, you're not going to apply it. You know, you're just not. You're going to go, how great for you guys. This is so awesome for you. Or, like we did for thousands of years, you know you're alcoholic, but there's no solution. And that's one of the more humbling things about AA for me, is to think that, you know, before the 1930s, we just died in loony bins and on the streets. You know, it was terrible. So to know that I had both of these things in place was really important. So at that time, I didn't know. I just thought it was crazy. And I would do those things where, you know, I thought it was bad luck. I was just having bad luck. Lots and lots of bad luck. So I would drink more because, well, people with bad luck drink, right? That helps. And I remember things were really bad in Hollywood because that's where I was working and living. I lived in Laurel Canyon. I lived with a Coke dealer who didn't do Coke. How awesome is that? I just love it. Sure, I don't do it. So I needed to get out of that dreaded Hollywood, and I ended up, my grandmother died, and I ended up moving to Ashland, Oregon to go back to school. So I'm 22 years old, and I moved to Ashland, and she had left a house, and I moved into the house, and this was my first geographic, not really knowing what that was, and I kind of set fire to my career, and I was really, you know, had the best intentions to get it right, you know, to go back to school and to, you know, fulfill my dreams, come back to the music industry and make it all work. And I loved Ashland. It was the late 80s, and it's a cool town. And there couldn't be any drugs or alcohol up there. There just couldn't be. And so I got a job as a bartender. And I remember, you know, I'm going to school. And the greatest thing about alcoholism for me was the resilience and the craftiness. And, like, people say, well, alcoholics are smarter. I don't know about that. No Al-Anon says that. But we are crafty, and we are crafty, and we're quick on our feet, and we can pull out of nosedives, and that part I believe. And so I went in and I got this job as a bartender, and I didn't know how to bartend. And I remember, like, the guy who owned the restaurant, he comes up and he goes, let me have a Ramos Fizz and, you know, all these weird drinks. And I just wanted to pour shots. That's what I thought a bartender did, was just pour shots. And so I start making, he goes, what the fuck are you doing? That's a mimosa. Do you even know what you're doing? And I go, I don't. He goes, well, you better learn. And I remember taking that little bartender book out, and I became an awesome bartender within 6 months. I was, you know, pouring. And I kind of landed on my feet. I was kind of doing okay with school. And then this really important thing happened. And this is where you get that kind of that moment of where you know who you are and what you are. Was forever, whenever I would wake up and panic, kind of that, because I'm a kind of a morning panic person. You know, are there any card-carrying members of the morning panic club? Yeah. And I would wake up just with that. Oh, my God, why did I do that? Why did I say that? Why did I spend the rent? There was always something behind it. I could always trace it back to actions, which led me to be, you know, panicking. But this particular moment, I woke up and there was nothing wrong. I had drank a bottle of Absolut, like the whole thing. And I remember because it was Valentine's Day, and I was sad because I didn't have Valentine's. I know. So I called Absolut, and she came right over. And we sat by the bay window and talked all night. So, but I woke up in a complete panic state. And I was trying to trace it back to, like, the homework was done, the rent was paid. You know, I didn't even have a girlfriend to cheat on. It was like there was nothing, like, you know, there was no reason why I was in this panic state. And so I was baffled. You know, it says we become baffled by our own actions, by our own feelings, these kind of things. And I knew this one crazy guy. He was like this homeless, hippie, weird punk rock dude. And I love this guy. I don't know why. He was really smart. He was just such a mess, though. And I said to him, I said, you know, I think I drink too much, and I think I need to address my drinking. And he goes, oh, Terry, what are you going to do, go to Alcoholics Anonymous? And I was like, whoa. I didn't even know what AA was, but I was like, I'm not going there. And he goes, you're fine. You need to take some mushrooms with me up in the forest. And that's what we did. And I took like a pound of mushrooms and went way into the interior and kissed a deer and, you know, like had these epiphanies and just saw God and all the rest of it. And in the morning when the sun was coming up, he dropped me back off at my apartment, and my little cousin was mowing the lawn, and she was using one of those old school mowers, and it was really hot, and I was supposed to be mowing that lawn, and I was dirty and I was demoralized and I broke down and I started to cry in the back of that house, and I said, you know, it's drinking. This is what it is. And I didn't find Alcoholics Anonymous for a while, but through a series of events, I ended up back in Los Angeles. Didn't finish school, kind of ran from that whole thing. And I remember, and this was the next important step of this, was I had, oh my God. I had gone down to Mexico on a windsurfing trip. I didn't windsurf, but the girl that I was with windsurfed. So, you know, this was the same girl in Ashland that said, I'm going to break up with you if you don't go to yoga every day. It was like 1988. Nobody went to yoga. So I went with all those crunchy hippies every morning to yoga. I like it now, but... and so we drove all the way down to Baja, Mexico. And that was another really revealing trip, because I had gone 5 days, 5 or 6 days without any alcohol. And I remember I was at a supermercado. And I don't even know how I got this much Spanish out of me, but I said to some poor kid boxing, I said, dos cervezas, baños, vámonos. And he was just like, okay. And he brings me these two beers, you know, and I'm like, I'm sitting on the toilet and I'm drinking these two beers, and I'm like going, man, I am fucked here, because I really need this stuff. I really need alcohol. I really need it. And, you know, and she's like, you're in a good mood. And I'm like, you know, I'm just so happy to be windsurfing, honey. So anyway, that trip, and we like burned that whole thing to the ground. And I ended up back in L.A., and I went I knew a guy who was a drug dealer, and I knew he'd be up. And I had nowhere to go, and I had a van with all my belongings. I've left school. I've left the relationship. I'm 24 years old, and I'm just, you know, I'm done. And I go over to this guy's house, and I'm drunk, and he goes, you know, just go to sleep. And I passed out on the living room floor, and I wake up, and there's five or six people there And they're all like looking at me, like staring at me like this. And I look over, there's like a pound of Coke on the table. They're like, we're really worried about you, Terry. You know. And I'm like, yeah, you pulled an all-night vigil. I can see that. That's good. And the owner of the house says, you know, there's a group of men that meet across the street, this elementary school in Laurel Canyon. It's still an AA meeting. It's still there. It's a round robin. It's a men's stag. It's been there for 30 years. And I went over there, and that was my first meeting. And they just, I don't remember much, but they were just, they were really kind to me. And this one guy just kind of kept patting me on the back. And, you know, that's when it kind of began. It began to be revealed to me that there was another way to live. But I have this thing, and I still do it, and it's much less, but I want to intellectualize everything. Like, I don't want to do anything that I can't know how it all works. Like, break it down, broad strokes, give me the secret handshake, I need to know, you know. And that's not what this is. I probably know less after 17 years of sobriety than I did walking in, because I don't tend to intellectualize it anymore. I really tend to just say, this is what's supposed to be. This is it. The nicest thing for me was that was the start of the path. And I'd like to say that, you know, I stayed sober from that day, but I didn't. But I did do something. I stayed sober for long enough for it to really screw up my drinking moving forward. And if you're in here and you're new and, you know, you've been here for a little while, this is really going to this is going to ruin your drinking. All those good drinking plans you have is probably going to ruin them. And it's good, because I think the reason it ruins them, or for me, is because I'm aware now. I'm aware of something I wasn't aware of before. And that's that there's another way to live. There's another way to deal with my problems. There's another way to learn how to be a good father, son, brother. And even an active member of society that gives something back. Do you have a card for me? How long am I going to... All right, can you go? Are we getting there? Okay. 10 minutes. Good. So the rest of the 10 minutes is just about sobriety and how awesome it is. And, you know, how much I've been able to enjoy being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So after the dust settled and what I consider to be my real sobriety date, when I really got serious, is January 14th, 1998. And shortly before that, I had a son. And I was in San Francisco, and the bottom had hit hard. And a woman that I knew for not very long walked up and said, I'm pregnant with your son and I'm going to have your child. And I said, do I look like father material to you? And she said, well, you don't have to be involved. And I said, well, I'm going to be involved. I said, we're going to get in the car. We're going to drive to L.A. A trip that takes normal people, you know, I don't know, 8 hours. Took us 3 weeks to drive from San Francisco to, because I knew, I kept saying to her, I go, I promise God no animals or children would be, you know, screwed up from my drinking, and I mean it, and I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And she was just like, oh my God, maybe you shouldn't be involved. And and this is the saddest thing about this. We didn't name him. We didn't name the boy. We called him the boy for the first 4 months of his life. That's how bad. It's bad. It's bad. It's bad. It's bad. It's bad. Because we couldn't agree on anything because we were drunk. And my mom, she hadn't seen me in so long. I end up in L.A., and I show up on her doorstep. She had tried to call. She would say, please just pick up the phone. Let me know you're not dead. I mean, that poor woman. And so I show up, and I remember I put on, like, the best outfit I could get, and I bought him a little matching outfit, too. And I showed up on her doorstep, and she opens the door. She bursts into tears. She goes, give me my grandson. She goes, what's his name? And I was like, well... Because you didn't fucking name the child, Terry. What's the matter with you? Anyway. His name's Jeremy. He's getting straight A's in college. He's 18 years old. He's 6'4", green-eyed, beautiful kid that's not troubled and not afflicted from what I can see. There is a God. And all I had to do was stay with you guys. And that's how I raised him for the last 18 years. He has more sobriety than I do. and it, clearly you can see it if you talk to us together. He's the more mature of the two. And I have a daughter who's 11 who makes my heart sing. And they've never seen me drink. And it's... You know, it's humbling because I know that, look, it's good to laugh, and I like to laugh, but this is a deadly disease, and I know it, and anybody in here knows it, and so we stick together, we stay together, we do this together, you know, this is, and this group in particular has something that I think is the essential ingredient. And that's enthusiasm. It's really important to stay enthused about something, to stay connected to something. There was a part of me that was going to come down here, was going to talk heavy about the steps and concepts and everything, and as I said, I talked about what I talked about, and I'm glad I did. But I will say this, that the home run for me in the book, and which continues to guide me, which I need to remind myself of, is it says, and I paraphrase, but in the final analysis, meaning we're not going to analyze it anymore, we found the great reality deep within. This is where we found God. I always went to Sector 9, Nebulous 4, looking for God, you know? Because, you know, God help me! Like, you know, God's here. And as somebody said to me, it's not going to be okay. It is okay. So I'm going to come back to this group. It's a great group. And he's never been. It would freak him out. I just want to end with something to the newcomers. You know, again, I wanted to figure this out. I want to intellectualize this. I want to put it in a neat package. But we have a code in here. And if there's any military people in here, and you ask the military what the code is, they'll say the code is everything. The code is something you can distill down so that when the bullets start flying, and they will start flying, you can go back to faith and honor, whatever it is, whatever your code is. Our code is love and tolerance of others. It's a big code. It's a big umbrella, and if you can fit everything under that, I think you'll be okay. Thanks.